Hello, everyone. This is Erica, host of Amazing Grace Talk, the podcast, a show that will explore how God has pursued everyday people who have experienced a radical encounter with His unconditional love. These are the stories that remind us why God's grace is amazing. Well, hello, everyone. My name is Erica Seymour Williamson, and thanks for joining us back here for season two of Amazing Grace Talk. Thanks for making season one such a great success and over 10,000 downloads. Well, today on our show, we have a guest. He's a longtime friend of mine. His name is Stephen Bishop. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Erica.
Yeah. So Stephen is partly, the reason and the blessing of why we're doing this show on YouTube now and semi-live. And that's because he used to pretty much call me periodically and say, hey, why are you just doing a podcast? You need to be on YouTube.
Yep. Right? Correct. You're missing the boat, Blondie. You're missing. I think that's what I said.
That's typically what he said. So I've known Stephen since like the mid-80s or around the mid-80s. Used to work with my husband at Oil Exchange. And then you went on to D.C. We didn't see him for quite a while. And then,
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. You know, I mean, how we reconnected is definitely a blessing. And,
yeah,
you know, this story is only happening really because of, you know, you and Eric had a major component in that.
Wow.
So there you go. Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, his story, really just how he got sober, his spiritual walk, his journey of how that all happened. He's going to share with us today. And we're just grateful that, grateful that he could be here and come into town for this show to record the show. So thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
So where do we want to start? Back where you started? Where did you used to go to church maybe and growing up?
Sure. Yeah. In fact, there's quite a few people that we know from high school that went there. I went to Cliff Temple Baptist, Oak Cliff.
Yeah.
Went there from, you know, being just a kid and ended up going on to teach Sunday school my first year of college when I was going to UTA and then ended up at North Texas.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I followed my girlfriend to North Texas. She was set to go to A&M and I was going to go to UT. And right before we were going to leave, she goes, hey, I found a better place for my major. And so she told me she was going to North Texas. And I was like, well, UT to North Texas, that's 4 hours. That's just not going to work.
Yeah.
So I went to North Texas and lo and behold, I met a guy there that does custom paint work and fabrication. And I ended up going to work for him. Okay. And to make this a long story short, some years later, I guess in 99, I had gone, I was helping him. I'd already left there, but I was helping him paint a car and ended up at a Keller's Drive-In. And I spilled a beer on a guy who ended up hiring me into Nortel and sent me all over the world.
Wow.
I lived in Russia, Spain, France, Mexico, Canada, Nigeria. I was actually in Nigeria on September 11th.
Were you?
And, you know, I can remember whenever I was notified that, you know, the U.S. was under attack and, you know, we went back to the hotel and all the guys went to the bar and I went to my room. And I remember the first person that I saw jump. Not to say he was the first guy that jumped, but he was the first guy that I saw jump. And I was just like, oh, my word, you know, please have mercy on this guy's soul. But he had no other choice. He was either going to burn to death. The building was going to fall on him. Or he was going to do that.
Yeah.
And so anyway, the very next day I'm sitting outside waiting for our buses to come pick us up to go deploy this network. And I was just like, you know, dear Lord, if you open the door for me to help find who did this, I'll walk through it.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I ended up taking a transfer into the federal group inside Nortel and moved to DC. And, you know, it was very interesting work serving the U.S. government and, you know, Nortel going bankrupt and then going on to Ericsson. And then I ended up at another place where, these guys were doing a lot of bad stuff.
How long were you working for the government at this point?
By the time that I went to go work, I guess I'd been contracting for about 10 years.
Okay.
So I held a security clearance with the government with a polygraph. In fact, Eric got interviewed by the government, my first clearance.
Yeah, he told me that many times and I think was just like he couldn't believe the people who were coming to ask about you. So
yeah, it's interesting stuff. Anyway, I went on to go work for this one guy. You know, I've got to leave some names and company names and stuff out. But turns out that he and some others had formed a conspiracy and were stealing quite a bit of money. And due to a couple other relationships I had, I was making dinner for some people and didn't know, you know, once again, this is God having his hand in all of this, right?
Yeah.
That you don't realize it when you're in it, but then you look back and you go, oh, now I know that, you know, the mess I was in and that somebody was watching out for me. You don't see it when you're there.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
Right. Once you look back and you see it. And it turns out that, you know, a customer that I used to work with, I was making dinner for he and his wife, and he started listening to me talk, and he was like, well, hold on, I'll be right back. And I was talking about what I thought was a bunch of fraud.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he lays his Glock on the counter and his credentials and said, you know, I know you don't know this, but I'm a special agent in charge of DHS OIG.
You didn't know that when you were telling him?
You had no clue.
Thought he was a friend over for dinner?
Yeah. Or that I was over at his house cooking. Right. He was a former customer, had no idea what he did now. And that's the way a lot of that industry works.
Yeah. Is
you don't know, you know, what your friends do.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he said, you know, you've got to disclose this to the government. If you don't, I have to do it because you've given me enough evidence right here just from what you've shown me in your paperwork. There's enough evidence for search warrants.
So really there wasn't any thinking, should I go, should I not, until at this point you had to.
Right. Because if I didn't, then he was going to turn around and go, hey, this is where I got it. And then the government's going to be looking at me going, are you part of this fraud? How come you didn't want to disclose it?
Yeah.
And so at that moment, I became a whistleblower.
Wow.
And so it took some time to, you know, to find a lawyer to, to file a lawsuit. There's a lot of moving parts to my case. And finally, I found a guy. We got it filed right after Thanksgiving of 2013. The case went on. The civil case just settled. The civil case is actually, it's kind of weird. The civil case settled before the criminal case went to retrial.
Okay.
There was a mistrial in 2018, which I believe whenever I told you and Eric about the case was in October of 2017 when it had just unsealed. And what unsealed means is I can legally acknowledge that the case exists.
Okay.
Because if I hadn't, if I had told you about the case before, I could have been held in contempt of court.
Okay.
Anyway, lo and behold, when the case unsealed, several people got indicted. And then, you know, trial was set for October of 2018. And right before the trial, my former boss committed suicide in lieu of standing trial. And that actually is probably one of the things that led to a mistrial for that. And so then COVID hit. You know, so it delayed everything exponentially. The civil case ended up settling in June of this year. And then
finally.
And then the criminal case went to trial, and they were everybody was found guilty. In fact, they deliberated for less than a day.
Really?
Yep. And so the sentencing for one guy, I believe, is in August. Another guy's in September, and another guy's in October.
Okay.
You know, but through this, I know that you knew as well that, and I also sent you some articles where one of the guys that had been convicted had threatened a bunch of people's lives, and including my own. And so, you know, whenever you become a whistleblower, you become unhirable. And I'd gone from where, you know, I could pick up the phone and talk to somebody and have a job. Now nobody would deal with me. And, you know, everything that I'd worked for, you know, I start watching it just dissolve. And I'd always, you know, kind of partied a lot, maybe drank too much as it was, but that was what kind of pushed me over the edge. And I never will forget one of the first things that led me to sobriety was whenever I finished the boat, you know, my boat that, you know, y'all have gone out with me on so often.
Seen sunset cruises.
That's never happened, folks. But anyway, so so once I got that done, Lake Louisville was really, really low. It was 2013. And I'd been out kind of cruising around. There was a storm coming. And I show up to put the boat back on the trailer, and all the other trucks and trailers are gone. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm not used to this. And anyway, it turned out to be one guy by himself who was there fishing. And you know, it was kind of weird for the fact of He didn't have a tackle box. He didn't, you know, he wasn't wearing waders. He was wearing jeans and a shirt and some boots. And lo and behold, I'm like, hey, man, can you just talk to me just to, you know, kind of keep me calm? And he's like, you know, what do you want from me? You know, I'm on the ground and you're in the boat. You know, what am I supposed to do? I'm like, just talk to me, man. It'll be all right. Well, before too long, he ended up taking a shirt off and taking his boots off and rolling up his jeans. And he wades out there and he helps me get the boat on the trailer. Mm-hmm. And then he pulls the boat out of the water because I'm staying in the boat to keep the thing balanced.
Yeah.
And anyway, whenever he gets out of the boat, I'm like, hey, or once he gets out of the truck, I'm like, hey, there's $60 in that center console. Why don't you take it? You know, thanks for your help. He's like, I don't want your money. And then he was like, you know, so, you know, where do you go to church? And I said, well, you know, I grew up a Cliff Temple Baptist there in Oak Cliff. And he goes, yeah, I'm familiar with it. And he even knew who Dan Griffin was, who used to be our pastor there. Yeah. And so anyway, he was like, you know, don't want your money, you know, but, you know, how's your faith? And I'm like, well, it's struggling. You know, it was forced on me as a kid, but I got lost, you know, and he was like, well, why don't we pray about you renewing your faith?
Wow.
And by the time the prayer ended, it was pouring down rain. And I was like, you know, do you need a ride home? It's like, oh, no. I just live right over here. I'm like, you sure I can't give you a ride home? He goes, no. Mm. And so as I'm pulling out of the park, it kind of occurs to me, you know, Christ wasn't a fisherman, but his apostles were. And this guy's by himself, no tackle box. So, you know, mm-hmm. I was always raised to believe that, you know, God can come in any form.
Yep.
You know, you don't know who you're talking to. You may think you're talking to a person, but you're not. You could be talking to him.
Yep.
And it's a test.
Yep.
And so, you know, at that moment, by that time, I knew that I kind of had a drinking problem, but, you know, I'd been able to kind of be like the little Dutch boy and stick my finger in a hole and kind of keep the water from coming through. And so I started, you know, trying to get back into my old career because I liked it so much, mm-hmm. and I couldn't do it. And everything started to really dissolve around me. I couldn't get a job, and I started drinking more and mm-hmm. more and more and more. And then finally, what was that? We were in church, and I also believe this too, is that, you know, God puts things in front of each of us.
Yeah.
Only we can look at and understand. Mm-hmm. So there's something that's probably transpired in your relationship with God that you look at it and go, oh, this makes sense. I know what this is. And for me, it's kind of the same thing, mm-hmm. you know, that he has his own way of going, hey, you might want to rethink this.
Yeah.
And so we were in church mm-hmm. and we were all at fellowship mm-hmm. and Eric had that homeless guy was walking through the parking lot mm-hmm. and Eric was like, hey man, why don't you come in and go to church with us? We'll get you something to eat. We'll get you something to drink. Come mm-hmm. on in. And, anyway, so we're sitting there basically like right on the front row.
We invited him to sit with us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it went, the homeless guy, Eric, you, and then me. Okay. And ironically, the sermon that day was everybody has their struggles. And I'm sitting there and I am hung over and I'm looking at this homeless guy and I'm kind of thinking, you know what? I'd probably trade places with him because I bet he doesn't have this alcohol problem. And he's probably looking at us thinking, oh man, these guys have got it made. They have it all. They got it made. And meanwhile, you just don't realize what's going on in other people's lives. Well, the very next day, I actually had found a job through a friend of mine that's now mm-hmm. my financial advisor. Mm-hmm. And I had to go to San Francisco to see a customer.
Okay.
And, I got on the plane and I was really, really hungover from yet another night. Man, I started watching, what was the flight, the movie on that flight? It was the Star Wars movie. The one that came some years later.
Return of the Jedi?
No, that was 1983. What was the one after that?
Way later?
Yeah, where they introduced, anyway.
Shoot, I don't know.
It's the one where Han Solo dies.
Okay.
And for anybody who's listening to this or watching this that hadn't seen it, sorry, Han Solo dies. But there's a scene where his son kills him with a lightsaber. Okay. His son has gone on to be one of the dark side guys.
Yeah.
And the scene where his son kills him, his son has this face, makes these faces of that show fear and anger and hatred. And he's got this big gap somewhere in his heart and he's looking for anything to fill it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? I've been that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, I am that guy. Mm-hmm. And right now, this is going to stop. And it came to where, you know, hey, I'm going to, if I have to cash out the rest of my 401k, I'm going to beat this.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I was in treatment. You know, I went to San Francisco, turned around, came back, told my boss, went and checked myself in, spent 7 weeks, lost that job in the meantime.
7 weeks.
And I've never touched a drop since.
Today, our show was sponsored by Amazing Grace Retreats, which are Christ-centered retreats and workshops to help women find clarity, overcome struggles, and discover their true calling. For more information, please visit AmazingGraceRetreats.com, or you can find this information in the show notes. What gets you through? Did you do the 12-step program? Did you do AA, or how did you get through?
So whenever you're in treatment, mm-hmm. they kind of walk you through the 12 steps, and yeah, you have to do those. And so mm-hmm. I spent quite a bit of time writing letters.
Yeah.
In fact, I still write letters. In fact, mm-hmm. I wrote one last week.
Did you?
Yep. Somebody that lives here in Dallas that mm-hmm. It had been on my heart for a bit of, you know, hey, I need to write this letter to this person.
Okay.
And anyway, I've made amends with a lot of people, and some people listen and some people don't. You know, and the thing that you have to realize, or at least, you know, they teach it in the 12 steps, but some people struggle with it,
mm-hmm.
is that you actually have to surrender and go, you know what? Game over. I'm turning this over to somebody else. Somebody just help me, and I will do whatever it takes for the madness to stop.
Yeah.
And if you realize as an individual that, you know, you've got a problem,
mm-hmm.
that's really the first step. Because when I look at the relationships I have now, you know, I've, you know, made amends with my aunt and uncle. I've made amends with a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can be around people that drink, and it's not triggering.
It doesn't Mm-mm. trigger you.
No, but, and it's very simple. It's for the fact of, you know, I know you have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And dogs don't bother me, but cats, some of them I'm allergic to.
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody pets a cat and they rub their eyes, they may be fine.
Yeah.
But if I touch certain cats and rub my eyes, I'm going to swell up. I'm going to start sneezing. And I will not be the best looking guy. And alcohol is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people can drink and not have a problem. And that's how it started for me, but that's not how it ended. And I just can't take the risk of those relationships
mm-hmm.
for me to go back to that.
Right.
And that's through God, where I just maintain a certain vigilance.
Well, yeah.
Because I'm not sure, you know, people can go, and this is the society we live in. I don't want to start a debate here, but... You know, it's a disease. Oh, it's a problem. And I look at it and go, no, drinking is a choice. You know, if I open a beer and I drink it, that's not a disease doing that. That is a logical decision that I've made.
Well, some people believe that they have an allergic, that they're allergic to alcohol. And I believe that some are. I mean, maybe you weren't that kind of a drinker, but I know in my case with my ex-husband, he was a binge drinker. And if just that one drink would trigger that, whether it's drinking or drugs, would trigger that just a chemical in their body that would cause that. And sometimes it's things that have gone on past in your life, and some it could be that. So I think there are different types maybe of people with drinking problems or alcoholics. So, but I respect what you're saying. I mean, about it, that's your opinion and
that's
how you feel about it.
Well, but the other thing too is that, you know, whenever people start to say, oh, it's a disease, and mm-hmm. it may very well be, for me, just myself, I don't know if there's any more forgiveness from my friends and the people that are important to me left in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, hey guys, I started drinking again, and oh, it's a disease. They may go, you know what? Sorry. We were willing to give you a pass on the first time, but not again. And because of that, I'm not willing to run that risk.
Well, I mean, you can even go deeper into that. We won't go there today, but I believe it can also be a generational curse, and that's a whole nother story, but I do believe in that.
Sure. So. Oh, I could tell you some stories about that too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, but to your point, that's, you know, today's not the day for that. But, you know, whenever I look at, you know, going through this case, and people really don't understand what it's like to live that. And anybody that's watching or listening, one guy that I enjoy reading his stories, I'd look at Blake Percival.
Mm-hmm.
And he had found out that a company called USIS does all the background investigations for people with their clearances, that in some cases they weren't doing them. They'd get a package from from the government and go, hey, we need to investigate this guy. And they'd just stamp approved.
Just stamp
and
go.
And send it back to the government. Well, you know, first of all, that's false billing. So there's that. But, you know, whenever he blew the whistle on that group, by the time it was done, he was living either in his in-law's house or his parents' house, sleeping on the floor, working as a stock boy in a grocery store. Wow. And the grocery store was allowing him to take expired food home to feed his family because he made so little money. And I think he's got four kids.
Wow.
And, you know, that happens all the time. You know, addiction, divorce, suicide, all go in this. They all swim together in this pool.
Yeah.
Well, and there you go.
I have a, if I don't want to take you off subject, but I was thinking about from the time you blew the whistle to the time that you could actually speak about it. How many years was that?
Four.
What was that like? I've had to, there was something in my life that was, I had to keep secret because of protecting someone else. So, and that was on a way smaller scale. And I know what I felt like. What did you feel like? How was that?
You know, I don't really mind not, you know, disclosing a secret or whatever. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but the
Sure. Just... but the problem really became is whenever somebody would look at my resume and go, okay, you went from here to here to here. There's been this great progression, especially whenever you look at the dollar amounts of the projects that I was managing and the number of people to where all of a sudden you just packed up and left.
Yeah.
You know, when I ended up, my first job after I left that company was selling cars. You know, and so you look at it on paper and go, you go from doing all this cool work. This doesn't make sense. Why? And you can't legally explain it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I just wanted to change. And then, and that leads to something else of, oh, okay, so you're going to come work for me. And what's going to happen one day, whenever you feel that you need to make a change, you're just not going to show up and that's going to be the end of it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a challenge. But yeah.
Well, I know there's a whole other part to this story, and I'm not sure, you know, where you want to go with it from here. I mean, I know there's some legal parts to it. I don't know what you want to share from that as far as you tell me.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, really is my, you know, as I got sober and, you know, renewed my faith, I mean, I look at myself now and there's things that I still struggle with.
Okay.
You know, one is, you know, there's an office that we worked in for a while that everybody called the locker room because it was all guys. it was doing some really unique stuff for the government.
Yeah.
It was a good time. It was very mentally challenging. But yeah, I mean, some of the stuff that would go on down there in the language that flows around that office sometimes. What, if you hear it repeatedly, then you end up picking it up.
Yeah.
And for instance, I mean, think about it. I'm down there, you know, with your dog and I'm not paying attention to him and he walks up and and just claws me right in my left ear. And what do you know, that boop, you know, had to edit that part out. And it's because, you know, I've been around that so much that's something I struggle with. And so, you know, there's that because that doesn't really speak the mind or that's not showing the public of being a Christian.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I need to work on.
Well, hey, we're all a work in progress for sure.
You know, and then with COVID, you know, being able to go to church, that I sit in front of a computer screen pretty much all day long. And me sitting in front of a computer screen for a church, that's too much.
Yeah.
I can go in person, but I just can't watch a computer anymore than what I was doing. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm looking forward to getting back in and finding a church home, and especially I'm not sure if I'm going to be back here in Dallas or I'm going to stay in D.C. I'm looking at maybe moving, you know, somewhere in between.
Yeah. So now you have options. Now that the case is settled or partly, now you've got some room to breathe.
Correct. Yep. I'm, as of about a week ago, I'm completely debt free where, you know, that's nobody can understand, you know, hey, you know, you're carrying $52,000 in credit card debt and, you know, you write that check and all of a sudden it's gone. Then you write your tithe and you do all of that. And you can go, okay, great. You know, I've probably slept more soundly in like the last week than I have in the last 8 years.
Yeah.
And that's, once again, that's not what I did. This is where I hopefully can, you know, help other people that are going through this. Cause my hope is that somebody's going to be watching this video or hearing this in audio and going, man, I've got something going at work and I don't know what to do. And they reach out to you and you put them with me and then I'll go, here's how you want to handle that.
So do you want to be a consultant maybe in the future to help these people walk through that, or you're not sure yet?
Well, I mean, I would help anybody to go through that. But there wouldn't be a way to, the way it works from those lawsuits, you don't get paid until the case settles. And so, you know, like my attorney, he had incurred hundreds of thousands of dollars in costs that he didn't recognize that for 8 years. So the only way
that's unbelievable,
the only way that I could do that would be either A, for free, or B, I take a percentage of somebody's settlement.
Yeah.
And unless I had a business that would do that, I don't see wanting somebody's percentage, because I'm an anomaly. You know, I've never been married. I don't have any kids. You know, a lot of people have been married or they are married and they have kids. They have all these other financial responsibilities that I don't have. And so I wouldn't really feel right about, hey, I'll help you, but you got to pay me. Oh, by the way, you're unhirable and you can't, and you don't have any money, but pay me and I'll help you. That doesn't sit right.
So now the case did settle, but you do have a job that you're working at. And how is that going? I mean, are you enjoying that?
Yeah.
What do you think about it? Is it, it's not what you were doing before?
No. I work as a subcontracts manager for a smaller government contractor. They know nothing of this.
Really?
Yep. They didn't ask when I was getting hired. And normally, like when you go work for a publicly traded company, there's a box on the application that says, have you ever engaged in any civil litigation against a former employer? And
you're like,
well, and you go, yes. And then you become, oh, well, we'll not never hire mind. You. But in a smaller company, they don't ask if they it's not publicly traded. And so, you know, it's a good job. I enjoy it. You know, my computer's downstairs. I'm pretty sure I have 100 emails from the time I've been sitting here. But
What's going to happen if they hear this?
Well, you know, God's just provided.
Let God provide.
God's provided for me in the past. And I'm sure that, you know, if they want to fault me for doing the right thing, which is, you know, recovering stolen money on behalf of the taxpayers. If they want to do something to me, then I don't want to work there anyway.
Yeah, I understand.
Now, I'm not going to volunteer it, but if they find it, whatever.
Well, the question that a lot of people may or probably want to know is, if you had it to do all over again, would you speak up and do the right thing? I mean, would you? I know you went through how many years? Eight,
almost nine.
Almost 9 years of your life on hold. I know that's a tough question.
You know, what's funny is I tell my attorney sometimes, because he and I'm not sure what our relationship is like. You know, I think there's a part where we understand each other. There's a part where we probably want to, you know, turn off the lights and get in a room, and whoever walks out, you know. You know, sometimes I'll tell him, you know, I should have stayed there and become a part of this conspiracy and stolen money. And that's an emotional response. I couldn't do it. I could not, you know, I took an oath to defend this country from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I couldn't declare financial warfare against my own country. And that's really what they did. I couldn't do it. No. So I'd do it again. I'd be a little bit more well prepared next time.
Well, who can know these things though, right?
Right. Exactly.
Who can know?
Right.
I mean, it's a tough thing. And I know we're definitely, Eric and I are extremely proud of you. You know, I know when you said you came to church hungover, hey, you at least came to church. And second of all, we didn't know. I mean, I don't know if it's good or bad. You hit it well. And I know that we had gone to lunch that day. And you said that I thought it was like the next day you checked yourself into rehab. And
well,
we had no idea.
The next day I'd gone to San Francisco, and then I came back and checked myself into rehab. But what you're getting confused there is, after we had lunch, we had a couple of beers there.
Yeah.
I went to another bar after we left that, and I completely tied one on.
Okay.
I don't even remember getting in the car to go home. And, you know, that's another thing, is that you know, had I ever, you know, done something stupid and gotten a DWI or something, it would have impacted the case.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the government, they're not going to want to get involved with somebody or represent somebody that, oh, you know, hey, yeah, he's on paper, he's a drunk.
Yep.
So, you know, that's a, once again, it's a blessing from God. Because to your point, I hit it.
Yeah. But I was going to say, we didn't know. I had no idea. But what, even after going through recovery, not drinking, moving forward, I mean, what is your, what got you through them? I mean, just your relationship with God through, did you think, just,
well,
what can you share about that?
Well, so, you know, I would say that, yeah, my relationship with God, but also too, some of the people that, that are in my life that maybe have or had a better relationship with God than I did at the point or at that time. I mean, think about it. You were buying me books that I've read. You know, you'd send me, you know, scriptures and stuff.
Devotionals.
Devotionals, you know, from every morning. Hey, I just read this. And you'd send me those.
You know what's wild? See, I didn't even know you were struggling through that. Mm-hmm. And I remember I would send Jesus Calling devotionals, and it got to where I would send them on a regular basis. And then when I wouldn't, you'd say, hey, and then I finally bought you a Jesus Calling, right? Right.
Exactly.
Yep. And sent it your way. But I guess to that point is you just never know, since you did hide it well. You never know what people are going through, what their struggles are. You weren't allowed to tell anyone what was going on for so many years. And just reaching out the best way we can as Christ followers to love on people, friends, and even people we don't know, just to share his love. So I'm grateful that you have been our friend all these years, and you trusted us enough to come around and share your story. It's been treacherous just as an outsider looking in on what you've been going through. I mean, it's just kind of unimaginable of just keeping having your life on hold.
Sure.
And moving forward in that. That's.
Well, yeah. But I mean, once again, that's where it boils back down to Christ and making, you know, believing that he's going to provide as well as,
yeah,
you know, having people around you. Once again, it's like the thing that we always heard as a kid, you're known by the company that you keep.
Yep.
And so as I got sober and started discarding people out of my life that that were not good for me, and I started surrounding myself with people who are good for me, yeah, it all seemed to work out.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You know, I mean, for instance, whenever I got my settlement and I wrote my tithing check, one of the churches I gave money to, one pastor wrote me a handwritten letter that I got. And, you know, he was just like, oh, my word, you know, thank you. And that's great to get, but whenever, you know, I gave some to another church, they were like, do you really want to know what this is going to be applied to? And I was like, well, sure. And they were like, well, you know, we're doing a renovation that we found out that, you know, in our building that we found out we've got a problem. And, oh, by the way, you just, you know, paid 27% of our shortfall.
Wow.
And so, I mean, that's to a church that it's for it's like a church school building.
Okay.
So that's where, you know, kids are going to be being taught about Christ. I mean, think about the ripple effects from that. I mean, and that's God going, okay, hey, look, if you continue to work with me, think about the other things that we can accomplish together.
Yeah. And I remember one of the times that, I mean, you kept thinking your case kept getting pushed back and, you know, it's coming up. No, it's pushed back another year. And I remember not even very long ago, because someone shared this with me. And so I shared it with you. And I said, you know what? I know it's just dreadful to think about all the debt you're incurring that you and the things that you don't have, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting, and it feels like you're waiting the 40 years, you know, they talk about in the Bible and lots of places. But I remember someone told me, think about what you would feel like if that money were in your account today, and thank God for it ahead of time.
Sure.
And it changes your attitude of, It's like it changes everything. If you visualize that, if you think about it, if you thank God for it, you know, thank you for finalizing this. Thank you for helping me to, you know, get finished with all this. I mean, it changes everything. And it really, I mean, I'm not saying it was directly from that at all, but it does help you get through it when you're going through a tough time.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, I mean, I remember you telling me that. So,
yeah. I mean, hopefully that helped.
We'll see.
Well,
man, I got to tell you, I mean, if anybody's listening or watching, you need help, you know, with a whistleblower deal, Reach out to Erica. She'll connect you with me, and we can, I'll do whatever I can to help anybody through that.
Awesome. And we'll put away however you want them to contact you. If we can disclose that, for them to be able to reach out to you, but either way, we'll find a way to make it happen.
Yeah. I don't want anybody going through what I had to go through.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for joining us today, Stephen.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us again. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram or Facebook at Erica C. Meyer Williamson. And please subscribe to this podcast so you won't miss any of the amazing stories that could open your eyes and seeing God in a whole new light and bring hope and healing to your life. If you would like to be considered as a guest on our show, please email me at ericacmeyer@gmail.com and share a little of your story. If you have enjoyed these podcasts and would like to be one of our awesome supporters, please click the Patreon link in the show notes to sign up for monthly support or a one-time donation. We thank you all for your generous support. And last but not least, we would be so honored if you would write a good review, subscribe to the show, and share this podcast on your social media. We'll see you back here next time on Amazing Grace Talk.